The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and probably from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And we're going to start with the Harvard Health Letter and one of my favorite sections, which is Ask the Doctor with Dr. Anthony Komaroff. This, again, is the October 2023 issue. And it begins with a question for Dr. Komaroff. Does exercise raise or lower your blood pressure? And what's the best type of exercise for blood pressure? And Dr. Komaroff responds, while you're exercising, your blood pressure along with your pulse goes up to supply additional blood flow that your exercising muscles need. Otherwise, regular exercise lowers your blood pressure throughout the day. Besides lowering your blood pressure, regular exercise reduces your risk of heart disease. Many kinds of cancer, including breast and colon cancer, diabetes, obesity, kidney failure, osteoporosis, and gallstones. And by the way, it also protects your ability to think, improves your mood, and lengthens your life. No pill yet invented can begin to give you all those health benefits. And pills cost money, whereas you can exercise for free. Do all kinds of exercise lower your blood pressure? In July 2023, the British Journal of Sports Medicine published an analysis of 300 randomized trials involving 15,000 people. Each trial assigned people either to a particular form of regular exercise or to no exercise for a period of at least 2 weeks. Several types of exercise were evaluated: aerobic exercise training, the kind most often studied, high-intensity interval training, dynamic resistance training, isometric exercise training, and combined training, which meant aerobic plus one of the other types of exercise. High-intensity interval training is a relatively new type of exercise that is popular because it takes less time and may give benefits comparable to more vigorous aerobic exercise. It involves repeated cycles of brief, high-intensity exercise, followed by brief, low-intensity exercise. Dynamic resistance exercise is a kind of strength exercise that involves movement of muscles and joints, like push-ups, shallow squats, or deadlifts. Isometric exercises are strength exercises in which specific muscle groups are tightened without movement of muscles and joints, like a wall sit or an extended plank. The good news is that each of these types of exercise was found to be clearly effective in lowering blood pressure. Since none of the studies compared one type of exercise to another, but instead compared one particular type of exercise to no exercise, we can't be sure which type of exercise is best. Particularly if you're over age 50 and have not been exercising much, it's best to check with your doctor before beginning a regular exercise program, since some types of exercise may not be right for you. But choosing one of them is the best thing you can do for your health. Now, here's a valuable article in the Harvard Health Letter that's entitled Hidden Causes of Weight Gain. The reason for gaining weight isn't always a mystery. You might know you've been eating more and exercising less, a potent combo that often results in extra pounds. But sometimes the cause isn't quite so obvious. You might not be aware of many of the other factors that can contribute. One is age-related causes. Getting older can bring physiologic changes that can affect weight. Chief among these is muscle loss. Starting in middle age, we lose about 1% of muscle mass per year, which affects strength and metabolism. Smaller muscles use fewer calories. If your diet doesn't change, you'll consume more calories than you need. The excess is stored as fat. Dr. Caroline Apovian, an obesity medicine specialist and co-director of the Center for Weight Management and Wellness at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Here are other age-related changes. Chronic stress. It's harder to manage stress as we get older. And if you're constantly under stress, you might have consistently high levels of the stress hormone cortisol. One job of cortisol is helping the body replenish energy stores. In some people, that might indirectly promote weight gain by increasing appetite and increasing the storage of unused energy as fat. But mostly, stress leads to compulsive behaviors like eating comfort foods, which are often full of sugar, unhealthy fat, extra calories, and salt. Poor sleep. Age-related changes affect your ability to sleep well. If you're a chronic short sleeper getting 6 hours or fewer each night, it might affect hormones that regulate appetite. Short sleep is associated with higher levels of hormones that make us hungry, lower levels of hormones that tell us we're full, and higher levels of cortisol, Dr. Apovian says. Sex hormone changes. Older men and women experience reduction in certain sex hormones. In women, low estrogen levels are associated with sleep problems and increased body fat. In man, reduced testosterone levels are linked to less muscle mass. Weight gain, especially if it's new, can signal a number of health conditions. For example, someone with heart failure might experience weight gain from fluid retention, which might appear as swelling in the feet, ankles, legs, or belly. This would likely be accompanied by symptoms like fatigue or shortness of breath, Dr. Apovian says. Other underlying conditions associated with weight gain include diabetes, certain kidney disease, sleep apnea, and thyroid problems. Taking certain medications regularly can lead to weight gain. Some drugs like prednisone can make you retain fluid and increase your weight, and many medications affect brain chemicals that regulate appetite. Examples include antidepressants like paroxetine or Paxil and phenylzine or Nardil, antihistamines that contain the ingredient diphenhydramine, the active ingredient in Benadryl, antipsychotics like clozapine or olanzapine. Clozapine is also called Clozaril, and olanzapine is also called Zyprexa. Beta blockers like Tenormin or Lopressor. Sleep aids that contain the drug diphenhydramine like Somnex, Unisom, or Z-Quil. Some potential causes of weight gain aren't yet well studied. One possibility is late-night eating. Some evidence, including a 2022 Harvard study, suggests that eating late at night might make us hungrier in the daytime, slow metabolism, and increased body fat. Another suspected factor in weight gain is the population of microbes that live in your gut. Their genes are called your microbiome. Considerable evidence suggests gut microbes might influence appetite, metabolism, blood sugar, and fat storage. The strongest support comes from studies of animals. In humans, the evidence is less clear. Studies have found that the gut microbes of people with obesity are different from those of people who are lean, but we don't know if this causes people to develop obesity. It could be that people who are genetically programmed to gain weight have a certain microbiome, she notes. Or it could be that people with obesity are eating a different way than lean people are eating, which might change the microbiome. We need more research for better answers. Any recent or excessive weight gain warrants a visit to your doctor, who can hunt for new underlying conditions and check if your medications might be influencing your weight. Getting those two aspects of health under control are essential. It might also help to see a dietitian to determine the right calorie intake for your current needs. Beyond that, Dr. Apovian says the best way to control weight as we age is clean living. Eating a healthy diet rich in fruits, vegetables, legumes, limited amounts of whole grains and starchy vegetables, and ample amounts of lean protein to help build muscle. Avoiding late night eating, getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep, exercising briskly every day for at least 20 minutes, and strength training at least twice a week. You can rebuild muscle, Dr. Apovian says, but it takes a combination of healthy lifestyle habits to control weight. Next in the Harvard Health Letter of October 2023, here's a article that's entitled Decoding Medication Instructions. The doctor prescribed your new medication. You picked it up promptly. Now comes the job of taking the drug, which can be tough if directions are vague or confusing. Here's some common instructions that can trip people up. One is take as needed. This allows you the flexibility to determine when you need the medication for symptoms relief, but the instruction requires additional guidance. It's not safe to take a medication anytime you feel you need it, whether it's a pill, a topical lotion, or a cough syrup. You need to know the intent of the drug, what it does, and the maximum amount you can have in a day. Is it one dose or three? And you need to know how far apart doses should be spaced, says Joan Doyle Petrangolo, a pharmacist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Take once daily. When exactly is the once in once daily? It depends. Some drugs are best taken in the morning, like thyroid pills that you need to take on an empty stomach. Some are better taken at night. Cholesterol-lowering medications are generally taken once a day at bedtime, since your body produces more cholesterol overnight, Doyle Petrangolo says. And sometimes it's wiser to take certain antidepressants or antihistamines close to bedtime, since they can make you drowsy in the day. Another instruction is take one tablet twice a day. That's another instruction with vague timing. You might interpret this in different ways. I was just working with a gentleman whose interpretation was to take pills at 9 a.m. and 1 p.m., which was too close together, Doyle Petrangolo says. If the label says twice a day, it usually means once in the morning and once at night, about 12 hours apart. Take with food. This direction is intended to help you absorb certain drugs or to avoid the stomach irritation they can cause. But does take with food require a snack or a meal? At what point in the process do you take the pill? And does the type of food matter? You need to prepare your stomach by putting food in it first. Typically, that means you can take the medication after a few bites or a whole meal, Doyle Petrangolo says. But some medications, like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, might require an ample meal to prevent stomach irritation. Does the type of food matter? That depends on the prescription, Doyle Petrangolo says. Certain antivirals or antifungals are absorbed better after a fatty meal. In other cases, a few crackers will suffice. Pharmacy websites often provide specific advice. Also, ask your doctor or pharmacist. Take with water. If the label says take with water, it might be to ensure that the drug is properly eliminated through the kidneys. But often it's simply to prevent a drug from sticking to sensitive tissues while going down. With certain osteoporosis drugs, for example, we recommend taking them with 8 ounces of water and not lying down for 30 minutes afterward. You want an adequate amount of fluid and time to avoid them irritating the lining of your throat or esophagus, Doyle Petrangolo says. Limit sun exposure. Some medications can make you more sensitive to sunlight while you're using them, leading to a bad rash or sunburn. This can happen with certain prescription drugs like some diuretics, antibiotics, antihistamines, anti-seizure medications, and antidepressants, as well as some over-the-counter products like topical treatments for acne that include the ingredient benzoyl peroxide. How much should you avoid sun exposure? Avoid being in direct sunlight for long periods. When you're outside, always wear a sunscreen with a sun protection factor of 30 or more. Wearing sun protective clothing like shirts or hats can also be helpful, Doyle Petronglo says. If you're unsure exactly how to take a medication, even if it was already explained to you, ask for clarification. Ideally, this will happen when your doctor gives you the prescription, but it's okay to call and ask later. You can also talk to your pharmacist about the best way to take a drug, either when you pick up your prescription or sometime later. Don't feel embarrassed. We understand that it can be confusing, Doyle Petronglo says. We want you to take the medication correctly so it has the best chance of working. Here's another interesting article from the Harvard Health Letter of October 2023, and it's entitled "The Latest in Medical Alert Systems." Cell phone and smart technology are making the devices more convenient. Medical alert systems have come a long way since they first became popular in the 1980s. Like most gadgets, they've taken a big leap forward as technology has advanced, especially in the past few years. One exciting development is the ability to integrate a medical alert monitoring device with an electronic gadget you already have, like a smartphone, a smartwatch, or a smart speaker. But the marriage is still young. While the integration has progressed, there's a long way to go before these tools become mainstream. Use of smart speakers in households is relatively low, and medical alert companies are very cautious about adopting these new innovations. But there is great potential, says Dr. Joseph Vadar, a Harvard Medical School professor and editor-in-chief of the journal NPJ Digital Medicine. Here's some examples of medical alert systems. The first is monitored home systems. Monitored home medical alert systems typically consist of a waterproof alert button worn as a pendant or watch that can transmit a signal to a base unit. The base plugs into your landline. When you press the button, if you're within range of the base calls a monitoring center. Trained operators then talk to you through a speaker in the base and can call your loved ones or paramedics. One new aspect of these systems is that some now come with built-in cell phone technology, meaning they don't require a landline. And some companies now offer systems that consist only of a voice-activated cell phone that connects you to a monitoring center when you call out on it. On the horizon is a voice-activated unit that can contact a monitoring center and function as a smart speaker, a small tabletop speaker with virtual assistant that connects to the internet, understands your voice commands, and carries out tasks. Then there are monitored portable systems. Thanks to cell phone technology, you can now get an alert button that can contact a monitoring center without a base unit. Most of these devices are waterproof and look like small garage door openers. You can keep the device in your pocket or wear it around your neck or clip to your waistband, and it will work anywhere there's a cellular service. These alert buttons have speakers, so you can talk to an operator. They might also have fall detection capability and global positioning system technology, which enables operators to send help to your exact location. Many portable devices can also be paired with the medical alert company's app that allows your family to communicate with you and see where you are. A recent development, Some devices look like a smartwatch, with a button to call for help along with other features typical of smartwatches, like a pedometer, heart rate monitor, weather app, calendar reminder, and even the ability to receive texts. Do you already own a smartphone, smartwatch, or smart speaker? You might be able to get medical alert monitoring services for it without buying any other equipment. For example, if you have an Amazon Echo device, you can pair it with Amazon's Alexa Together, a subscription medical alert monitoring service. And some companies like Lively now offer a subscription medical alert monitoring app, which you can download to a smart speaker or a smart watch. Medical alert monitoring is not cheap. Costs range from $20 to $50 per month, depending on the company. And any additional services you select, like fall detection or apps that enable your family to connect to your device. There may also be fees for activation and equipment, up to a few hundred dollars. The alternative is to get an alert system that isn't monitored. You can get a smart speaker and have it call your emergency contacts, but not 911 due to regulatory hurdles. Your smartphone probably already has an emergency button built into it. This might involve pressing and holding the side button. You can also download free panic button apps for your smartphone or smartwatch that will notify your emergency contact that you need help. And many non-monitored safety button devices are available online for less than $50. You can pair one of these with your smartphone to contact loved ones in an emergency. But will your loved ones see these notifications? Will they be able to reach you? Those are important considerations. As technology continues to improve, so will our options. And now here's a useful article, again from the Harvard Health Letter of October 2023. And it's entitled, "Do These Activities Hurt Your Knees?" Certain activities probably won't cause damage, but they might sideline you with pain. Here's what you can do. Running, squatting, kneeling, stair climbing, bike riding, jumping around in an aerobics class, these activities all require your knees to bend repeatedly and take a pounding. Does that stress wind up hurting the joints? Certain activities can indeed lead to knee pain or arthritis flare-ups, but evidence suggests that regular activity or exercise is unlikely to cause actual knee damage or accelerate knee osteoarthritis. In fact, activity is essential for knee health. If you heard the phrase motion is lotion, it means that activity helps to keep you going. And that's certainly true for the knees. Knee cartilage requires regular loading or force placed on it to stay healthy, whether that comes from taking a brisk walk or squatting to get something from a low cabinet. And when you exercise, your knees get a cascade of benefits. Exercise not only keeps knee cartilage healthy, but also builds muscle strength, which is important to stabilize the joint. In addition, exercise helps the knee maintain range of motion, decreases knee stiffness, and can contribute to improved function and quality of life, says Dr. Dana Yorks, an instructor in physical medicine and rehabilitation at Harvard Medical School. Many studies suggest there's no link between running, jogging, or walking and the development of knee osteoarthritis. For example, a 2018 study suggested the rate of knee and hip arthritis in marathon runners was half that of the general U.S. population. In a 2022 review of 24 studies, found no evidence of harm to knee cartilage among people who had just gone for a run. Despite the benefits of activity, certain movements can still cause pain in healthy knees. For example, some activities stress the knee joints more than others, like doing a deep squat, kneeling, or even going up and down stairs. These activities can be especially painful if you have severe arthritis or weakness in the muscles around the joint. Other activities that put excessive force on your knee and might cause pain or an arthritis flare include riding a bike with a seat so low that your knee has to bend excessively, jumping or bounding a lot in aerobics class, and going for a long run on a trail with uneven surfaces. To reduce or avoid knee pain, modify your movement. Here are some examples. One is stair climbing. Take one step at a time. Place your right foot on a step, then bring your left foot up to join it. Repeat the process up the staircase. Hold the railing. As you climb, align your hip, knee, and ankle in one straight line, and do not let your knee jut forward over your toes. Press your whole foot into the step, not just the ball of your foot, to use all the muscles of the ankles, legs, and buttocks, Dr. York says. Aerobics routines. If your routine includes a jumping jack, do a toe tap instead. If everyone is doing lunges but a squat feels better, do a small squat or something else that targets the same muscles. As far as running is concerned, run at slow speed for a short distance. Avoid hard pavement and look instead for surfaces with little more give, like a high school track that's open to the public on evenings. Do you sit cross-legged as you play with your grandchild on the floor? If it hurts, put your legs out in front of you, separating them a little. Kneeling. If you have to get down on your knees when you're cleaning a bathtub or gardening, you'll be more comfortable on a pad of some sort. And squatting. Avoid deep squats if they cause pain. Instead, keep a small step stool handy and sit on it when you need to get low to the ground. And when you're walking, consider using Nordic walking poles. If you continue to have pain, your doctor may prescribe physical therapy. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.